Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
And the NFL named its all-decade team, of course, for the 2010s. And Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers were the two quarterbacks. Now, they don't do it, you know, first team, second team. But if you really want to get technical, the fact that Brady was unanimous and Rodgers wasn't, I guess Drew Brees probably got some votes. Maybe Russell Wilson got a vote or two. Brady was the only one that was unanimous of the quarter of the two quarterbacks.
Right. There and were then eight Brady, players total, right?
Right.
That were
right.
Unanimous. Eight.
And Brady also, Rob, became the first quarterback ever to be all decade for two decades. That's an achievement. You know, obviously yep. means you played 20 years or, you know, the bulk of 20 years and were great for the bulk of two decades. So that's a huge accomplishment and a feather in Tom Brady's cap. And I want to ask you this. I'm going to throw this out to you, let you respond first. Who do you think was the best quarterback of this decade?
Aaron Rodgers, hands down, oh, no ifs, ands, or buts. And if you just want to do, throw out to say who won the most Super Bowls and that's the guy, then you would pick Brady. I get that. But that's not what it's about. Because up and down all the statistics, and you're talking about the pocket protectors and the analytics and all the numbers favor Aaron Rodgers, except for the Super Bowl.
And
really?
Yeah.
You sure
about
that? Yeah.
You sure?
Yes.
You might want to double check.
No,
your
I
research.
Saw the numbers. I okay. saw the numbers.
All right.
In the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers has a higher QBR, I mean quarterback rating. He has way less interceptions. He completed more passes than Brady. And also in the regular season during that decade, he had a better completion ratio. He had a higher, his quarterback rating
by
was
0.5%.
Was 103.6 to 99.6. And he had just a smidge under Brady's touchdowns at 305, and he only had 63 interceptions.
Well, I thought he had the better stats.
Just that one. And the other one
just
is...
Just touchdowns. Just the most
touchdowns
important
were 316.
Just the most important.
But he had 80 interceptions. He had 17
more. Well, we know Rodgers
more.
Doesn't throw interceptions.
Okay. So all I'm saying is, if you look at it other than just saying the Super Bowl, the numbers speak. And I get it. People, when they think about quarterbacks, they think about Super Bowls. So this is one that automatically they're going to just give it to Brady without even looking at the numbers. Wait a minute. He won three. Aaron Rodgers won one. Okay, he's a quarterback of the decade. I get it. It's hard to win three. Nobody's won six Super Bowls, no quarterback. So when you split them up, three in one decade and three in the other, that's how he's an all-decade team because he's played 20 years. All I'm saying is that the numbers, if you go by the numbers, I like Aaron Rodgers' numbers better.
Rob Parker, stop it! This is the height of foolishness. Now, Aaron Rodgers is great. I have no problem. In fact, they got it right. They got the two quarterbacks right. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, with all due respect to Drew Brees. But to act like it's even... I mean, you didn't even act like it's actually close. You didn't even act like it's in doubt.
Oh, no, it ain't close.
It ain't close. You're darn right. And it's Tom Brady by a mile. And I'm going to use your own catchphrase against you. Rob Parker, sports has a short menu. Wins and losses. And Tom Brady, why is he the GOAT? Is he the GOAT?
Because he is the GOAT.
Is he the GOAT? If it's even in the conversation for you because his stats are so great? No. He's in the conversation for you because of his winning, and he does have very good stats too. He doesn't have the best stats. So you're going to sit here and try to argue stats? If we want to argue stats, we can make an argument for Drew Brees. It clearly is Tom Brady. He threw more touchdowns than Aaron Rodgers. Do you mention completion percentage? It's 64.7 for Rodgers, 64.2 for Brady.
Wait a minute.
How many Pro Bowl receivers did Tom Brady throw to in this decade? He had one wide receiver who made a Pro Bowl in the decade, Wes Welker. You know how many Aaron Rodgers had? Four. Greg Jennings, Devontae Adams, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, four Pro Bowl receivers to throw to, and Brady still threw more touchdowns. Let me see my final thing, because you gave all your little numbers. Tom Brady is the only quarterback. Tom Brady in the playoffs has won six playoff games, where the opponent scored 28 or more points. Five of those came this decade. Aaron Rodgers and all the other greats have only two such games. No other quarterback has won more than two playoff games where the opponent scored 28 or more. And this decade, Aaron Rodgers has one. It ain't even close, Rob Parker. It's Tom Brady by a country mile. I can't believe you even are arguing
this. It ain't by a country mile because the numbers say what they are.
The numbers aren't even that far apart.
Aaron Rodgers has better numbers.
But who won more? And the numbers are close.
Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. With no touchdowns. He also coughed up.
He won three of them this decade.
Aaron Rodgers.
He led game-winning drives in every one of them.
It's always about Tom Brady did more with less. That's his mantra.
Well, that's what he did.
And Aaron Rodgers did it without a defense. Did it without a running game.
Without a defense.
They won. They won seven division titles. They did plenty.
What does that mean?
What do you mean?
Get out of here with that garbage division.
That's not garbage. You're talking about what did he do? No, it ain't, because Tom Brady. The first three Super Bowls were about Adam Vinatieri. They weren't about Tom Brady.
Really?
Go look. Yes, really.
I think he got the rings.
Yes,
I think
really.
He led a game-winning drive in every single one of those Super Bowls.
Yes, really. It was about, Adam Vinatieri had to kick a 55-yard field goal.
Could he have kicked it without Brady leading the drive?
Yes, he could have kicked it with any quarterback driving 40 yards.
Come on, this is ridiculous.
Tom Brady, you already know it.
You don't give LeBron credit for winning conference championships, but you want to bring up some old division crown for Aaron Rodgers?
But I'm giving you Aaron. It ain't like Aaron Rodgers just has that and doesn't have the numbers.
What else does he have?
He has all the numbers better than him. Every number's better.
Are touchdowns better?
That's the only one.
You just said something wrong then.
No, that's the only number. That 316 to 305.
Interceptions over 10 years. That's not even two per year. Stop it, Rob Parker.
No, you got that.
I'll be shocked if even one caller agrees with you.
And every GM, whenever they
poll it, Max on the line or whoever he is from Georgia.
They talk about who would you take. If you're just looking at this and not looking at how the Super Bowls were won or lost, I would take Aaron Rodgers 10 out of 10 times over Tom Brady.
Super Bowls? You can't
over
say
Tom
Super Bowl
Brady.
Plural with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I'm talking about.
He's been in one.
Yeah, but there were two other times. Aaron Rodgers had four playoff games.
Was he in the Super Bowl?
Where his defense gave up 40 or more points. 40 or more. How could you get to a Super Bowl?
You didn't give Tom Brady credit when his defense gave up 41 against Philadelphia? Did you give Tom Brady credit?
No, but
for
he choked.
For 505 yards, a record?
No, but he
for scoring
choked.
33 points?
He gave up the ball
you
with 3 minutes
so
to go.
You are so hypocritical. This is ridiculous.
Not.
You are just trying to fudge the numbers. Tom Brady
the
led
numbers
a scoring drive in every one of those Super
those
Bowls.
Those are phony, Chris,
you're
gonna
try
and you
to
know
give
it.
Credit?
A scoring
gonna...
drive? A field
yeah,
goal?
Yeah, that's just what it's about, Rob. It's about scoring.
His last Super Bowl, They won. Tom Brady didn't throw a touchdown, and they gave the Super Bowl MVP to a wide receiver who didn't even have a touchdown.
It's a team
That's how
game.
Bad Brady
I don't care
was.
Who is the MVP.
That's how bad Brady was.
Does Brady have six? Aaron Rodgers would. How bad was Aaron Rodgers against San Francisco
Brady
last
is the low. Brady
season?
Is the luckiest of all time. That's
Stop
why he has
it.
Six.
Stop it. That refrain is so old and so tired. It ain't even tired. It's tired.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so let's move into our next topic, Rob. And it's right up your wheelhouse. It is Major League Baseball. And Justin Turner had a bright idea. I don't know if it's bright or not, but he had an idea where he said for this year, for 2020, hopefully they play. And they're talking about having these doubleheaders. So he said, look, if we're going to have doubleheaders, then we don't want to run the risk of, you know, what if the first game goes 15 innings or 17 innings or something? Then you got the next game or the second game goes that long. It just is going to make it tough on the pitching staffs and it just can get out of hand. So his suggestion is that if no teams, you go nine innings, the game is tied. You play one more inning, the 10th inning. If neither team wins it after 10 innings, then you settle the score and you settle the game with a home run derby. Your thoughts?
No way, no how. Justin Turner should worry about playing baseball and not be the ideas guy. Stop it. It's bastardizing the game. A home run derby is not the game. That's for an exhibition in the middle of July at the All-Star break. I would hate to see baseball games end in that way, Chris. That is not the framework. It would be like you want to watch football where you have two kickers try to take three chances
so
at kicking
kick
a field goal.
The longest field goal.
Yeah, like, and you keep moving back. I'll kick it from 50.
How about a 40-yard dash? Each team gets your fastest player.
Exactly. I don't want the game to be like that. That's not what the game is. I don't like college football, Chris, where they, in overtime, where they put the ball, is it on the 35?
I'm in agreement. It used to be the 25, I think.
25.
Is it still the 25?
Right,
I agree
Rob?
With you, though.
Yeah, I think it's the 25.
Yeah.
And I just hate that. That's not the way a game's supposed to end. It takes away.
I totally agree.
It just, and you know what? I'm sorry. I get it. Most extra inning games don't go 17 innings. Every once in a while, Chris, you have one of those, but those are anomaly. Right. They just don't happen that often. Usually it's 11, 12, 13 innings at max. And it doesn't happen that often to dramatically change the game. I understand people are trying to figure out how do we go forward if we get to start a season and all that. But a lot of these ideas are just harebrained, like the World Series being at a neutral site, play until December. I'm just not with any of that. I'm just not.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to see the game bastardized either. And I totally agree with you on the college football, you know, how they settle games. It's completely different. It'd be like, you know, the NBA settling, you know, an overtime game with a foul shooting or a three-point contest, right? And so I'm with you. Now, I will say this. When I initially heard his comments and saw what he was talking about, I did say initially, you know what? He has a point in that, you know, you don't want these games getting out of hand, especially if there's a doubleheader. So I said, maybe for 2020, that might be okay. But then I said, you know what? No, you can't have it for 2020. And here's why I thought that, Rob. I think a lot of people would like it. I think a lot of people would like it. It would definitely be exciting and all that. And then there would be this push to perhaps have it permanently, which you don't want that. Because again, as you said, it bastardizes the game. And here's what I compare it to. If let's say we settled in NBA games that were tied, instead of playing overtime, you'd have each team's best player play one-on-one,
Right.
So that's let's say you got LeBron against Kawhi. I mean, we would love that, right? It would bastardize the game, but we would love to see it, and there would probably be enough casual fans that would be into it that, you know, it'd be tempting to go that route the whole way. So I don't even want to put that out there if I'm Major League Baseball, because it might be something that people like, and then there would be the temptation to have it permanently. So I'm with you. Keep it the way it is. If a game's long, hey, a game's long. Whatever. And it is what it is.
What do I always say? I love baseball, Chris. If the game is too long and I have somewhere else to go or something to do, you know what I do? I get up and I leave. That's what I do.
I think Turner's thinking more about the players.
Yeah, but you know what? If you can't play, obviously you can't play too many doubleheaders because of the pitching staff. But then you know what happens when you go – what happens when games go 15 or 17 innings? The catcher, one of the backup catcher pitches or an outfielder pitches, because you can't burn your arms if you know you got a doubleheader or two or a game tomorrow. So that's just – and then you have to try to get through the inning with somebody else pitching. It happens once in a while, and you see guys pitch who have never pitched in the big leagues. That's all.
Yep. Yeah, I think Turner will get pushback on this and then probably recant. I think that's what it'll come to. He already, and maybe he did mean this from the start, he already offered one clarification, was that he was talking about 2020. Right. I don't know if that was his original thought.
He might have said, an idea.
He might have backtracked a little bit.
But whatever
the case.
Let's talk. We're talking about extra inning games. Here's the classic, Chris. I don't know if you remember this. The classic. This is now you're talking about if a game like this. This is like one of those games that just doesn't happen that often. July 4th, 1985, Braves Mets game in Atlanta. The game goes 19 innings, right? 19 inning game. Right. The game ends at 4 a.m., Chris. The game ended at 4 a.m. In Atlanta on July 5th, the next day. And the craziest thing is, it was fireworks night. What does that mean? The fans get to watch fireworks after the game.
Right. Oh,
they blew the fireworks at 4 a.m. And fans waited.
How many fans were left
at
4 a.m.?
Yes.
I was about to say, just a regular season game, too.
Can you believe that?
What was the date?
That was the 1985, July 4th and 5th.
Oh, so it was just a regular season game. I'm sorry. There's no way I would have been there. Would you have stayed at that?
4 a.m.?
Let's say you didn't have to work in the morning.
No, I wouldn't.
All you got is radio that night. You can sleep all day. Would you stay?
No, not till 4 a.m. I wouldn't. And I love baseball. I put it on the radio, and then you get home. I remember going out, coming back, turning on the TV, and the game was still on. And I was like, what is this? And then, you know how you fall asleep and wake up again? Fall asleep, a couple hours later, I wake up, and the game is still on. And I'm like, is this a replay? The game went off at 4 a.m. That's incredible. Wow.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We have got one of the greatest fighters to ever lace up the gloves joining us now, the Hall of Famer, the all-time great Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray, welcome to the iCouple.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Man, it's great to have you. First of all, how's your family? Is everybody safe and good and all that?
Well, you know, it's just so surreal, man. It just doesn't seem... It's like a movie. It's like a damn movie, you know?
Apocalyptic movie.
Yeah, no question about that. And as much as I want to go out, I have not. My wife has not. And I just pray that everyone's okay. And those that lost loved ones, I extend my condolences.
Right. Well, this is
some trying times.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, it is.
This is the 33rd anniversary of your victory, your upset victory over Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And I want to ask you, I mean, you had so many great fights. I mean, obviously beating Wilfred Benitez, winning the championship, the first fight with Hearns, obviously an all-time great fight and victory for you, beating Duran in the second fight, and then Hagler, and there's even others. Which fight Is it the Hagler fight? Do you consider, I know it's hard to pick out.
Yeah, it is.
But
is
there one you consider your best victory?
You know, that they each had their own significance. They each brought something special to the table, to the ring. Hagler, no question about that. I mean, no one gave me a chance against Marvin. To go the distance with Marvin Hagler was a major accomplishment. With Tommy Hearns, the first fight in 81, Tommy was just a bull. I mean, he was a beast. Roberto Duran beat me with his mind and also his punches. Benitez, I had to go to the hospital. I was dehydrated.
Mm.
And he was so amazing. I never missed so many punches in my life against Benitez. So they each had their own situation, their own style.
Sugar Ray, where are you with the? I know people talk about the UFC and stuff and boxing for a long time. You know, wasn't on free TV. A lot of kids grew up without the fights like we used to watch on ABC Wide World of Sports or Saturday afternoons on the network television. Has boxing come back with many more fights now on television and not just pay per view? Or did they lose a generation of kids at one point?
You know, you want to say that because we lived that era, that time. But they say boxing's dead. Boxing's not dead. I mean, these guys are making, particularly Mayweather and the other guys, they're doing extremely well. I just wish that there was more, I think, the competition. I mean, in other words, don't say you're the best. Fight the best.
Right.
That's my problem, because there's so much talent. We have so much talent in professional boxing. I just like to see them fight. Whereas that you don't know who to pick. You don't know who to select. It's like with me and Tommy Hearns. Some people say, probably the majority say Tommy Hearns because of his power. And against Hagler, it's like, no way, because Ray's been out of the ring for 5 years or so. It's that kind of thing, that highly anticipated fight.
But you guys had to fight to make money. You know what I mean? You couldn't, like now you could wait for just one big payday or hold out. Back then you guys had to fight the best boxers who were there on the scene to make money, didn't you?
Well, yes, but also there was, I think what's happened, I think there's too many self-governing bodies and that it kind of dilutes the real belt, whether it's WBC, WBA, WBO. But see, there's just so many other championships. But again, I don't have a personal problem with that. I just think that hurts the fans.
Sugar Ray, I want to ask you, because a lot of people might look at it like, okay, you beat Hagler. Hearns gave you trouble, though you beat him, and then there was a draw.
Right.
But Hagler destroyed Hearns. You know, Hearns destroyed Duran. Duran
right.
gave you trouble. Like, I know his styles make fights is the cliche. Can you kind of explain it to the layman how you might be able to beat one guy easily, but another guy gives you problems? What is it that makes that dynamic?
Well, styles do make fights, and it's also that conviction. When you walk to that ring, you better be ready 100%. You can't be like, you know, 10% off or 50% off because you're going to get hurt. And with those guys, like with Tommy Hearns, I mean, Tommy Hearns, Jay, I mean, Tommy can hit you sitting down. I mean, and Tommy has so much heart. Tommy can box, and we didn't realize that until I fought him the first time. He was outboxing me, outmoving me. With Hagler, Hagler's ambidextrous. He can fight with both hands, power in both hands, always 100% in shape. Duran, oh, my God. They call him Manos de Piedras, hands of stone.
Right.
He hit me so hard. I said, who else is in this damn ring? I mean, I looked around because he hit me so hard. I thought it was like about three, four people in that ring.
Who was he the hardest puncher you faced?
The first fight, Tommy never hurt me, but he hurt me in the second fight. And even the knockdowns, I wasn't hurt, but he hit me on the top of the head, the temple, which knocked off my equilibrium. But Duran's punches were like, I mean, perpetual motion. Duran hit you like a ton of bricks. Hagler, too, had heavy hands. That's what they call heavy hands.
What when you talk about the future of boxing, you say boxing's not dead, but do you see it as a sport? Football's going through it with the contact and people with the concussions, and whether or not parents want their kids to be involved in boxing. There used to be the golden gloves and things
right.
like that.
Right.
And that those things have gone away. It used to be a big deal in New York when I was a kid growing up.
With the exception of the Olympics.
Am I right?
Oh, you're so right, yes. The golden gloves, man, that was it. I mean, winning the golden gloves was bragging rights.
It was big time. And now do you think it's we're going to get to the point where parents won't let their kids box, or do you not see that there'll always be those guys who are tough enough and brave enough to get in the ring?
Yeah, because you either love it or you don't. You know, there's no you don't count on anything. You either love it or
not
you,
in boxing, right? Right.
Not in boxing. Yeah, you don't waffle. You like it, you either love it or you don't.
I know you get this a lot. I've always said, you know, I got you ranked ahead of Floyd Mayweather because in addition to having the skills and the speed and all that, you would knock guys out, which obviously Floyd hadn't done, you know, later in his career. He wasn't even going for a knockout. I want to ask you this. I'm going to throw a twist on it. How would you have approached a fight with Floyd Mayweather, and how would you have approached a fight with Manny Pacquiao?
With Mayweather, with Floyd, I fought Floyd's father, and he gave me trouble. The only problem with Floyd Sr. was that he had bad hands, and he didn't have that power because his hands were so fragile. But he gave me so much trouble, but he also taught me a lot. It was like being in the ring, like a teacher and a student. He was the teacher, and he showed me so much. So I became a better fighter. The second question was when? What?
Manny, how would you have approached Manny Pacquiao?
Same. I mean, again, things. I mean, I would break things down. I would analyze fights. I would have tapes on him, and I'll kind of break him down. His strong points, weak points, whatever I could penetrate. But one of my greatest assets was speed. I had speed, good speed. It wouldn't be easy because he's so quick and everything else. As a fighter, as a man, as a guy, you know, I say I can beat anybody, and that's where you got to feel.
Right.
So if you ask him the same thing, the same question, he will say, "Well, yeah, Ray's tough, but I'll beat him."
I was going to say, you came back several times, and I've looked at boxers, and obviously many boxers, maybe most, come back and fight at some point out of retirement. I felt like there can't be a bigger ego trip in the world than having tens of thousands of people cheering you and then millions on TV.
Yeah.
For you beating somebody up as a man, is that the draw? Is it that you can't get that rush anywhere else? Is that kind of what draws people to keep coming back until they can't anymore?
That's a very good question. It's a combination of things, because when I first retired, I think I hold a record for retirements. So when I came back, you know, it was like, you know, I missed the limelight. I missed the money. I just miss being busy, because after I got out of the ring for the first time in 1982, I got involved with alcohol, more alcohol, got involved with cocaine, and because I wasn't happy. All I had, everything I've accomplished, and I had nothing short of an illustrious boxing career, but I felt I had nothing, you know. I was lonely, put it that way. That may sound crazy, but I was lonely. And boxing gave me that pat on the back, that, like, you know, you're training for something, you're working out for something. It's a weird thing. I'm trying to really articulate it.
Well, you were young, too.
Yeah,
I was. That was my 20s,
when you first retired, I think.
Right.
Yeah, that was my 20s.
But I get it. You know, you could be in a room full of people and feel lonely. So that's not strange. It's not. people don't understand that. It's not like being shut off and you were popular and you had all these people around you. You could still be lonely in those circumstances. But when I look at you and I see you today, I'm just amazed at everything you've been through and everything you've done and where you are. How do you feel today as far as, like, your health? You got through it. A lot of boxers don't make it. They get sick. They don't do well. I mean, it's a blessing to have you where you are. Do you look at it that way?
You're absolutely right. You took the words right out of my mouth. You know, first of all, I'm vain. I like staying in shape.
You're in shape, big time. You look great.
I stay in shape. You know, but then I've been a blessed man because I've come out of the ring over 50 years of boxing and come out somewhat unscathed.
Right.
I mean, really, with the exception of my, you know, the detached retina and what have you. But I just wanted to give back. I thought I was so blessed that I started a foundation with my wife and for diabetes, type 1, type 2. And we've been doing that, and that's been... That helps me out so much, man. Then when I give advice to, someone who is an alcoholic, and I could tell them, whether young or old, I'll say, hey, by the way, you know, I was a great boxer, I was a champion, this and that, but you know what, I feel much better now. I mean, it's those kind of things. And I talk about those things to help other people, reciprocating.
Ray, I gotta ask you this quickly before you go, because it is one of my favorite fights. Your first victory over Hearns.
Yeah.
And I love when Angelo Dundee said to
blowing
you, yeah, you're blowing it, kid. You're blowing. And you, I mean, you became the slugger in that fight. Tell me your mentality when you went out there. I don't remember if it was the 13th round or what, you know, and you just threw the kitchen sink at Hearns.
I don't know. I swear to God, I don't know. Angelo Dundee said, "You're blowing it, son. You're blowing it," and it was. He had the perfect soundbite. He said it the right way without yelling, but he said it enough for me to hear it, and right away I connected with what he was saying. I automatically agreed in myself, and I got up, and then I went out there the next round, and I caught Tommy with the right hand, and I just let go. I just, because once I get a guy hurt, 9 times out of 10, I get him out of there. And I threw so many punches, and that fight took so much out of me, but my heart survived. You know, it was my heart that gave me that additional intestinal fortitude.
That was a great, all-time great performance. Sugar Ray, we
Sugar
appreciate
Ray,
the
thank
time.
You so much.
Definitely.
Stay well.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.
Love you guys, man.
Love
all right, you
appreciate
too, brother.
It.